Good evening, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. Welcome back. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8. We've been focusing on democracy, building democracy in our state of Wisconsin. This is the Monday after Thanksgiving. And we are very, very thankful on this Monday. I am delighted to introduce and have back Scott Thompson, a lawyer with Law Forward. Hello, Scott.
Mark, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So before we sort of get into it, tell me a little bit about Law Forward, your organization.
Absolutely. So Law Forward is a nonprofit law firm that primarily litigates issues related to and that advance democracy. So frequently this involves things like voting rights, partisan gerrymandering, even balance of power issues and how the state government works. And we take a really acute look or close look at how the Wisconsin Constitution in particular advances our democracy. So that's what we do.
Well, thanks so much, Scott. And folks, the reason I asked Scott on tonight is because we have big, big elections coming up in 2023. I know we just got done with November 8th, and we're going to be asking Scott his thoughts on November 8th in a minute. But in February, we have the primary for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The election is going to be on April 4th of 2023. It is going to be a key race because it really, who we elect could decide the future. And I really thought that in light of that context, that we're really looking at April and this Supreme Court race and what it means, that what better way to kick that off is by calling Scott. And that's because Law Forward just recently published a report sort of on the state of the Wisconsin Supreme Court 2021 to 2022. And they really have come up with some themes that the court's been involved with. And I really think everybody, if we're going to make educated votes and know what we're doing in February and April of 2023, what better way to look at that by figuring out what the court has done the last couple of years. But before we get into that, November 8th.
Yes.
Okay. Law Forward, nonpartisan, nonprofit. What were the concerns of Law Forward going into November 8th? And what did the election sort of mean to you and to, in the broader scope, democracy in the state? Go ahead, Scott.
All right, I'm going to answer your questions in reverse order. So as to what it means about democracy, I think the 2022 election was crucial because in a lot of ways, democracy, the concept itself, was on the ballot. There were individuals who were running on platforms to use their power to undermine elections. And I'm really happy to say that in many ways, democracy came out victorious out of the 2022 elections. Those candidates who explicitly, you know, rejected democracy, were against voting rights, they did not fare well at the polls. I think really the people came out clear that those types of extremists don't fit in with American democracy. And I'm also really proud to say that here in Wisconsin, we actually had, I think, according to the numbers I've seen recently, the top turnout in the country, about 65% turnout rate, which comparatively across the country is great. It was number one. Now, that being said, it feels good to say this now, but as to your first question, there was a lot of things we were concerned about going into the election. Basically, 2022 showed us that the normal voting process, sort of bureaucratic steps along the way, can be weaponized in a way to prevent validly elected people from clearly taking their position in a sort of standard order. But after 2020, we saw additional threats on democracy and at the ballot box. We were concerned that disruptions in the normal voting process could keep people from voting. We were concerned again that the sort of bureaucratic steps in the electoral process could be gummed up one way or the other. And so we were constantly looking at how and whether litigation could be important even during election day to keep polls open or to make sure that any sort of major disruptions at a polling location could be dealt with. We didn't file any lawsuits on election day.
Let me ask you this. You talked about gumming up the procedure and lawsuits that, you didn't file any lawsuits on election day, but I think there were some lawsuits that were filed leading up to election day that addressed this issue of gumming up. So first, tell the listeners, my listeners, our listeners, what do you mean by gumming up? And what lawsuits were filed pre-election that had an impact on democracy and elections in Wisconsin?
Sure. So when folks go to vote, it kind of seems like a simple process. You cast your ballot, you put it in the machine, turn on the TV at night, and you figure out who won. There's actually a lot more that goes into it. After you cast your ballot, for example, and even after election day, there are canvasses at the municipal and county level to verify votes. There are questions after people cast their ballots about whether or not the ballot was properly filled out and should be counted. And we saw those sort of decision points as really pinch points in the democratic process, where if a nefarious actor wanted to, they could try and exploit those moments after the election that normally proceed very smoothly in a way that would, you know, slow down the democratic process such that someone could contest the results. It's basically the same rubric that the Trump campaign tried to weaponize in 2020. And so, again, I think we're just ultimately happy to see that when all was said and done, most people were able to see what the result was at the end of the night, and those types of pinch points were not weaponized. You know, there wasn't any major concern on election night.
Now, there was some concern about the disabled and their right to vote before.
Correct.
How did that play out before the election, and how did it ultimately end up?
So there was a lot of concern heading into election season, is probably the right way to put it, for voters with disabilities and how they would be able to cast their ballots. There is a lot of folks, and I think it's like 80,000 Wisconsin citizens, Wisconsin voters, have nursing home level of care in home. And Wisconsin has set up our system that way by design. We want people to be more independent. But those folks need someone else to help them return their ballot, usually their absentee ballot, either in person or to the clerk's office. And a decision from the Supreme Court of Wisconsin seemed to make that illegal this summer, at least to the clerk's office. So Law Forward represented a group of individual voters who were able to convince a federal court that sort of decision was just not consistent with the federal protections that guarantee these voters have a right to have assistance to get their ballot back in to the clerk on time. And on election day, we were able to directly advise local clerks throughout the state, because of that work, that they could accept ballots from individuals who needed help from a third party. And so I think, at least on that specific question, we were able to play a role to make that easier for folks on election day.
Well, we thank Law Forward for that. And on this, like I said, a Monday after Thanksgiving, that is something we can all be grateful for. So the, you know, coming out of the November 8th elections, and, you know, we're going to, after the break, we're going to come talk about this paper and sort of the themes that Law Forward has found and seen by its review of Supreme Court decisions. What are the concerns going forward?
Well, I think going forward, there's a lot of the same concerns that people were talking about before the November election. There's still a lot of minutia in the election system. For example, there's this ongoing question of what an address is. This is, again, it seems like it's too discreet, but it is important. When an absentee ballot is put into an envelope, a witness has to put their name, address, and signature on the envelope. And there's something of an open question about what address means. And again, this is a question that, if used the wrong way, could potentially disenfranchise voters. So that question is still being litigated in Wisconsin courts. But I think we expect to see not only these small detail questions on election process going forward, but we know there's also a concerted effort amongst, you know, other actors in Wisconsin to just make our democracy less responsive to voters. And those types of issues, you know, continue from the last term and we remain concerned about.
You know, one thing that I did note, that the candidate for governor that lost did something that, I stood up or stayed up until 3 a.m. to hear the concession speech. But when the candidate said he had called Governor Evers and conceded, I sighed, a big sigh of relief, because it was like, oh, it's over. We have a loser that's willing to walk away knowing they lost. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that whole process?
So there's a quote that is stuck in my head basically every day. Democracy is a system in which parties lose elections. If it's not a democracy, parties don't lose. They cling to power as much as they can. And I think you're right. When we saw a clear concession speech, it was a reminder that, again, this year, democracy won.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. I am here with Scott Thompson from Law Forward. We'll be back after the break here at WAK 540 AM. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8. I am here tonight with Scott Thompson of Law Forward, and we are talking about the important issues that all of us need to think about before we go vote in February and April of 2023 for an open seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And I thought, what better way to introduce this, but go to the folks that have been studying the cases and have prepared a report. And I'll let Scott tell you where you find that report. But the report looked at the Supreme Court decisions in the last 20, from 2021 to 2022, if I'm right, and came up with sort of three themes. And, you know, we're going to talk about those themes as we go forward the rest of the evening. The first, you talk about direct attacks on democracy. So tell us about the report, the decisions, and what does Law Forward mean by that there's a theme that there's a direct attack on democracy?
Sure.
That's a strong charge, right? So
it is a strong charge, but I think there's strong proof behind it. So the report is called Deconstructing Democracy, and you can find it on our website at lawforward.org. But What we have seen from the Wisconsin Supreme Court over the previous term, 2021 to 2022, was a series of decisions that either insulate government from the will of the people or just effectuate something of a breakdown in what we think of how a democracy works. We believe that the purpose of government is to sort of effectuate that will, the will of what the people ultimately want. And we think that it's important that when our laws are construed by judges, that they keep an eye towards advancing that democracy. This is something we call the democracy principle. But over the last term, the Supreme Court sort of turned that principle on its head, and rather than expanding our democracy, it sort of worked to limit it. The most, I think, obvious case to talk about is one called Johnson v. Wisconsin Elections Commission, wherein the Supreme Court, a very narrow majority, selected what I would call breathtakingly unfair maps to insulate the power of a conservative legislature, state legislature, and really preventing liberals in the state from any possibility of legislative power. As a result, there's no need to compromise. And so now, even though Wisconsin is really a purple state and is historically, I think, a blue state, the Republican Party maintains really a vice grip on any type of legislation. And so our democracy, as a result, is not functioning in the way you'd think it would. Even though, for example, Democrats might have 50% of all voters in a legislative election, they might only end up with, let's say, 39% of seats in the legislature. And that just doesn't make sense.
So break that down a little bit more in terms of the gerrymandering case. I mean, fill in my listeners, our listeners, to, you know, sort of what was presented and how it was decided. And it wasn't all unanimous either, right?
Correct.
So let's tee that up so people understand the breakdown.
Yeah, and it wasn't unanimous, and the majority actually changed in a really incredible series of events. So the Supreme Court did a couple of things. First, it decided via a very narrow majority, 4-3, that what it was going to do was adopt what's called the least changes approach. In other words, that the Supreme Court was going to change the maps the least it really had to, which is different than what it had ever done before.
Right. That came out of nowhere, right?
Correct. That is not in the text of any law in Wisconsin. That is not in our Constitution. That is something that the legislature plucked and that the conservative justices on the court adopted. Next, there was a question about, okay, if we're going to follow least changes, what do these maps actually look like? And a series of maps were presented by a handful of different organizations, and by a very slim majority, Justice Hagedorn, a conservative, actually joined the liberals to adopt a set of maps that, following the least changes principle, would at least be a little bit less gerrymandered than they were, let's say, 10 years ago when we began this debacle. Then the legislature appealed and sought a stay of that decision from the United States Supreme Court. And in what I think most lawyers would tell you is just absolutely unprecedented, the court changed that motion for a stay into motion for a certiorari, granted certiorari, and then vacated the Supreme Court of Wisconsin's decision, saying that it didn't appropriately follow the Voting Rights Act, a federal law. And now, instead of just applying it in the way that the Supreme Court had instructed them and still following the same principles that they had previously outlined to find the same maps, Justice Hagedorn sort of switched teams. And at the very last second, they just adopted the legislature's maps. And the reasoning in that decision was frankly incredible. The lead opinion basically saying that time is up and that there's nothing we can do. And so we have to adopt these incredibly gerrymandered maps from the legislature. And I think ultimately what that shows is, like I said, a willingness to to move back away from that democracy principle, because now we have maps that are just frankly unfair. And we're dealing with it because, you know, it's harder for our legislators to compromise, harder for them to respond to the will of the people.
Not only that, the governor's proposed maps had allowed for how many, you know, non-white majority districts, right? And then the legislative maps reduced that. So under the name of race neutrality, we have less minority representation in our legislature, right?
Correct.
Doesn't sound very democratic to me. So
not democratic to me either.
I am here with Scott Thompson. We're going to the break. We'll be back on the other side for more from Scott Thompson and Law Forward. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here at WAUK 540 AM or 101 FM every Monday night from 7 to 8. This is The Shaw. I'm very thankful to have with us Scott Thompson of Law Forward. And we've been talking about the Supreme Court race primaries in February, and then the main race in April for the new next Supreme Court justice. And we've been talking about the Law Forward report that summarizes the themes and lessons from the Supreme Court over the last term, 2021 through 2022. Again, Scott, thanks for being here. Where can folks find this report? And then we'll get into the second theme.
And I'm also thankful to be here, Mark. I really appreciate the time. And yes, our report, Deconstructing Democracy, is on our website, and you can find it at lawforward.org.
So I found it interesting that you folks, in your review of the decision, Supreme Court, the second theme you sort of highlight is consolidating power at the legislature. So tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean? And what does that mean for democracy? And what should people be thinking about along those lines when they go to vote?
So I think that this really flows from the first part of our conversation, the part about an attack on democracy, because with the sort of precision-guided gerrymander in place in the legislature, the next step to preserve that power or to expand it would be to concentrate power in the legislature at the expense of really the other branches of our state government. And I think the best example of this that you'll find in our report, that you'll find from the last term, is in a case called Call v. Prain. And this case involved some bizarre procedural nuance, but it was really important to our democracy. A Governor Walker appointee to the State Natural Resources Board, Dr. Frederick Prain, had his term expire. The statute is very clear. It says his term shall expire, I believe, after 6 years. Nevertheless, Dr. Prain, elected to remain in his seat, being what is called a holdover appointee. Attorney General.
Meaning this, right, that usually when your term is up and your side loses the election, generally democracy says you step down, you walk away, and let the new players get on the field, right?
That's exactly right. And positions like this are appointed by the governor. And so when Wisconsin voters vote for governor, they're saying, okay, this is the type of person I want to be on the Natural Resources Board. This is the type of person I want to be on the State Technical Colleges Board. And so that's why we see this as a legislative power consolidation issue, because what ultimately happened is, even though the law says very specifically, hey, your term is up, what the Supreme Court ruled is that the only valid way for Governor Evers at this point to replace Dr. Prehn is to get the state Senate to formally approve his nominee. Now, the state Senate won't even hold hearings on Governor Evers' nominees. They're not going to vote in approval of them, certainly not. And so what we are dealing with now is that Governor Walker actually maintains dead hand control over significant offices of the state executive branch. And now this is two times that the Wisconsin electorate has come out in force and said, this is not the type of person we want on our state boards. Yet nevertheless, we are stuck in a situation where individuals like Dr. Prehn can stay on this board theoretically until they die.
So the practical consideration, now that Governor Evers has won re-election, what do you think the position of these holdover appointees is going to be? What do you think the new heads of the Senate and the Assembly are going to say about this? Do you think they're going to continue to stand by losers' control, or do you think they're going to readjust their political thinking?
Well, I can't guess what the heck they're going to do. But what I can say is this. What the Supreme Court did in this Prehn case was incentivize this bad behavior. Because at least beforehand, you know, I don't know about you, but if someone told me my term is up in 6 years, I'd be up in 6 years. But now with the, you know, stamp of approval from the state Supreme Court that this illogical conduct is okay, there seems to be a new incentive that maybe didn't exist previously. Now, I think that because of the gerrymander, it's very unlikely that the majority leadership in either house of the legislature is going to suddenly reverse course. I think what really might, and this is just reality of it, these people might just get bored eventually. I think that there is some truth to the matter that, you know, maybe you don't want to be in this position for the rest of your life. Maybe you have other things that you want to do rather than stay on for literally ever. But I don't think that there is anything out there that makes me believe that suddenly the leadership in the legislature is going to reverse course and now immediately act on and approve the nominees that Governor Evers sets forth. I just don't see that happening.
So, you know, given, I mean, we all grow up civics and we hear about three branches of government and checks and balances. How does this decision and the court's decisions on checks and balances, how does that play out? I mean, this is one decision, but how are there others that have really consolidated the power against with the legislature? And in this case, a gerrymandered legislature, which is, you know, right-wing Republicans.
Right. And so I think the checks and balances conversation is really important here. And when you think about it, it's almost as if there were two checks that have now been removed. The first check was that the governor gets to appoint this individual. That is sort of no longer the case, at least for Dr. Prehn's seat. And the other thing is that the judiciary, the Supreme Court, had the opportunity as the other check to make sure that our three branches of government stayed strong, could have said, no, this obviously doesn't make sense. Governor Walker shouldn't still be controlling our state agencies. But they abdicated, I would say, their duty to uphold that democracy principle here once again. And so I think this Prehn case is a really good example of when the checks, you know, don't actually serve as checks or can't actually serve as checks. Now, the most obvious other place to look for consolidating legislative power is certainly the Johnson case that we talked about before, that made sure that not only would the gerrymander that began in 2010 continue, but probably get worse, putting that in place. And I think these two cases together, it feels like a perfect storm where the one is, like I said before, sort of incentivizing the other. Unless there is some break on the stranglehold of the gerrymander, these incentive structures are just going to play out, at least before the currently constructed court, in a way that's pretty problematic for the most basic principles of government.
So Taking those, you know, those couple of themes that you've already talked about, direct attacks on democracy, consolidating power in a gerrymandered legislature. People that are listening and paying attention to the election, the primary, you know, in February and the final election in April, what questions should folks be asking these candidates?
Well, that's a great way to put it. I think one thing that I like to think about is that the Supreme Court sort of looms in the background in many of these discussions, but has such a significant influence. And so the questions that I would be asking have to do with how would a Supreme Court justice in their position really advance our democracy? How do Supreme Court justices consider voting rights? These sort of just like elemental things that I think over the last few years, people started to realize are actually really important to everything else. And so even if you're concerned about, you know, DNR regulations on your lake up north, you also have to be considerate about who is your person in the state Senate now. And I think that that's a result of having justices on the Supreme Court who view democracy in different ways than I think, frankly, they should. But that's neither here nor there. I think the questions that people should be asking of these justices is really, you know, what can they do in their role as a leader of that branch of the government to make our democracy healthier?
So where does the state constitution and its interpretation play out in these decisions? You know, I mean, how does the majority and the minority and the dissents, right? This debate between these justices on these issues, how do they look at the state, you know, our constitution?
Right. And this is, you know, not always the most obvious thing, but Wisconsin has its own constitution, different from the federal constitution.
Well, that's what I'm asking. So what does it say? And how are these decisions consistent or not consistent with your view of what the state constitution says?
Well, I think that the state constitution, or I know the state constitution, guarantees that these branches must exist, Frank. Like they set forth clearly that the executive branch has control over certain things. And in the 70s, the statutes that dictate how the executive branch are supposed to work made really clear that all these appointments like Dr. Prain are really executive functions. But this sort of dovetails with I think the last part of our report on results-oriented judging. Frankly, I think that the results that we see in cases like Prain are something of an outcome of protecting the constituencies that generally favor certain justices on the Supreme Court, where they derive some of their power from.
We'll spend a little bit more time on that issue after the break. But I want to go, you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer, we look at these issues, and you know, there's all this discussion about activist judges, and you know, the conservatives say that, you know, the liberals are the activist judges. But if you have a state constitution that says that the executive power has the power, how are the current conservative majority tipping, you know, our state constitution on its head?
I would say that it's less that they're tipping the state constitution on their head and more that they're just ignoring it. There are a lot of protections in the state constitution that are, you know, different than the federal constitution. And I think that in situations like this, it just becomes convenient to ignore it when it's not in their favor. And they find other arguments that, you know, I don't think cut much mustard, whatever this phrase is, but the truth of the matter is, if you look at the central statute in question, said the guy's term was over in 6 years, shall expire in 6 years, and the court was comfortable ignoring that to, again, cement the dead hand control of a governor who's not in power and hasn't been for quite some time. And so I see this as less as an exercise of a difference in how to read the law and more as an exercise in really power, how to insulate this type of long-term conservative effort that we've seen in Wisconsin for the last, you know, 12, 13 years or so. Those things are very close, closely related.
So, folks, I am here with Scott Thompson of Law Forward. We're talking about Law Forward's report on the Supreme Court, its last term, its implications for the upcoming elections in February and April of 2023. We will be back after the break with Scott Thompson. This is Attorney Mark Thompson, spelled differently, folks. This is SEN. This is The Shaw, folks, WADK 540 AM. We will be back momentarily. And this is the Paul Revere Show. We are here on The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM 101 FM every Monday night from 7 to 8. I am here and very thankful for Scott Thompson of Law Forward, and we're talking about what we need to be thinking about before we go vote for our next Supreme Court justice, the primaries in February 2023 and the big election in April 4th, 2023, because the whole courts, you know, the future of the state is up for grabs, essentially. And we've talked about three themes that Law Forward has identified in the recent cases: direct attacks on democracy, consolidating power of the legislature, and I want to focus on, you talk about results-oriented judging. What do you mean by that? What do the decisions have to say, and why is that an important issue for people to be thinking about?
Sure. So, and I think you've probably seen, I know you've seen this in your career, Mark, but judges and jurisprudence very frequently sort of cloaks its goals in what I call a false sheen of intellectualism with terms like textualism or originalism, these sort of broad concepts that signify that there is a level of intellectual honesty in the work being done. When I think that the cases, when you take a real look at them, reveal that that's really not the case. And I think this term, or this past term, 2021 to 2022, really showed that. And so there's one example in particular that involves a concept called standing, which is a little bit of an annoying legal concept that I'll explain just a little bit. The idea is that in order to bring a lawsuit, someone has to have been, usually it means injured, or that their rights have been compromised to some extent, such that they have something to complain about, something to actually sue about. And in Wisconsin, we have had standing doctrine lawsuits have been a really significant area of contention for a long time. But this most recent term in a case called Friends of Black River Forest versus the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, the state Supreme Court basically threw out a group of environmentalists' case on these standing grounds, basically saying, hey, you don't have enough to actually sue. Now, the actual controlling opinion, I think, is just about a paragraph long. And in rejecting the plaintiff's claim, the Supreme Court more or less invented a new standing doctrine. That nothing that's based in a statute, nothing that's based in the Constitution, but just created a new rubric by which this standing question would be resolved. And then just 3 weeks later, there was another case before the Supreme Court where standing was a central litigated issue. And that's this Tigan case that we've talked about that involved drop boxes and ballot return assistance. And even though that question was litigated at every single stage of the process, and even though the Supreme Court had just created a new doctrine just 3 weeks earlier, they didn't apply it. They didn't even answer really the pending questions about whether or not the plaintiffs in that case had standing. There was not a majority of justices who really could agree on that standing question. And what you saw in that situation is it seemed like what's good for my friends will not be good for my opponents. And so the group of environmentalists lost on the standing question, but the conservative activists won on it in Tigan. And the sort of refusal to engage with their own precedent, I think, left us with a "their emperor wears no clothes" type moment where we could kind of see what was really going on. And now going forward, we have this problem where standing doctrine in Wisconsin, like really what it takes to be able to bring a lawsuit, is really unclear. I think if you talk to 50 different lawyers about what these two cases mean, if you looked at them together, you probably get 50 different answers. And so I think what people should be thinking about is with the court that we have, with whatever Supreme Court we have, it's important to have some level of consistency so that these things at least seem fair. And it sure, certainly didn't seem fair coming out of the last term.
So here's a question, you know, going forward. And we started talking about the November 8th election. I've been looking at the numbers. There are a lot of young folks that voted. Gen Z was, I mean, a lot of young people voted. And a lot of women voted. A lot of new women registered voters. A lot of that was driven by the U.S. Supreme Court overruling, you know, Roe and this Dobbs decision saying that, you know, women don't have the right to choose, make their own decisions about reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. We have a state constitution. We have this election coming up. How do these trends that you've identified play out? And what are the questions people need to be asking about that? And, you know, within our state constitution, do we have Roe arguments to make, to reverse? I mean, you know, we're living in a state now where our abortion law was, what, 1849? Right? Women didn't vote. I mean, this is like crazy stuff.
Yep. Our democracy in 1849 is very different than the democracy we have today. 1849 was also when the state of Wisconsin put the question of whether basically black men could vote to a statewide referendum. And even though the majority of people who voted supported giving the right to those folks, I believe the canvas found some cockamamie reason to deny it for about 20 years thereafter. So I think that if we look back to where Wisconsin was when that law was passed, it was a completely different place. And you're right, there was different people voting and there was different people that we would honestly consider Wisconsinites today. And so I think that the Wisconsin Constitution definitely protects a lot more things than the federal constitution would. The things that are similar, for example, substantive due process, have more expansive language in Wisconsin. And I mean, let's be real. This is where these fights are fought. You know, Roe was a Supreme Court of the United States decision. We are going to have similar contentious fights in the state of Wisconsin about what our constitution means. So these things that play on the federal level, they're going to play big on the state level very soon.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. I am with Scott Thompson. He shared with us Law Forward's report on the state of the Supreme Court. Look it up, folks. Read it. Educate yourself. Start talking to your friends. I will be back next week. And folks, please tune in. We will have Lieutenant Governor-elect Sarah Rodriguez back with us. Last time she was here as a candidate. Now she is here as victorious to tell us what's happening. Good night, Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show, folks. We'll see you in a week.